big book that we call the Bible, but the truth of the matter is it is one big story. It is one big novel. And in order for us to understand what this novel and what this story is all about, we've got to read it from beginning to end. You know, we have to know the whole story. It doesn't ever do any good to pick up a novel from the library and, you know, pick up a chapter 40 and start reading there. You know, that you're not really going to understand what's going on. You're going to miss a lot of the build up to the plot. You're going to miss a lot of the characters and who they are and what's going on and how it got to this point in the story, and you're really just going to be lost on what the story is all about. And that's certainly how many approach the story of the Bible today. And they approach it they usually start in the Gospels or something like that. Or somebody may suggest that they go read one of the letters from Paul. You know, you can see a situation where a coworker is questioning something and says, well, why don't you go, you know, check out the book of Ephesians. And Paul really talks about, you know, but for someone who isn't versed in what the story of redemption and the Bible is all about, they may be totally lost if they just pick up at Ephesians. And so it's important for us to, you know, God's people to understand what the whole story of redemption is all about and what the story of the Bible is all about. And so, you know, we've talked a lot about just all the things since the creation event that certainly happened but are just not recorded in the pages of the Bible. Certainly there are people that God worked with, miraculous things God may have done, other powerful interventions that God did in the lives of people to help people and to do things, move in very powerful ways in the lives of people. But these things simply aren't recorded because they do not relate to the story of the Bible, which is redemption. And so that whole story is, you know, where we came from, what we messed up, you know, and then how God resolved that problem. So it's basically all the story of how God resolved our problem with His Son on the cross. That's the main story of the Bible. And we've looked how everything in the Scriptures all points to the cross. From the beginning to the Gospels, it all points to the cross. From the Revelation and going backwards, everything points to the cross. The cross is the pinnacle of the story. It is the climax of the story. Jesus is the hero of the story. All right, and that's the thrust of the whole book. And so that's what we're looking at. That's the knowledge we're trying to gain out of this. And through all of that, we learn a lot of things. We see how God solved our problem. We see how everything in the Bible reveals God to mankind, who He is, what He's like. You know, and this is another important aspect of this story. The simple fact of the matter is, this is not a fictional story. This is a very real story. And you and I, whether we like it or not, we're all characters in this story. People who outright deny God are characters in this story. By the simple fact of the matter is that God created them and that God loves them and God sent His Son to die for them. Whether they want to be a part of the story or not, they are. And so, you know, when we look at the Bible, it's important for us to try to draw out of this as a secondary thing, you know, what it means to be like God and what it means to be one of His children. You know, a lot of us, who are blessed and fortunate enough to have good and upstanding fathers, we understand what it's like to want to be like dad, you know, or to want to be like our mom, you know, and following their footsteps and following the things that they've taught us. And certainly that's the way we need to be about our Heavenly Father. You know, we need to see what it is to be like Him, what it means to like the things He likes, to dislike the things He dislikes, and to behave in the ways that He would behave, live in the way that He would live. And of course, we see all of that exemplified in His Son. Jesus came down here and exemplified that life and said, look, here's what it means to live like God. I am God. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Follow me. And so we see that a lot in the Scriptures. And even before Jesus came, though, there's so much knowledge to learn. You know, the New Testament tells us that the Old Testament was written for our understanding and for our learning. It talks about the fact that it was a tutor that led us to Christ. So there's there's a wealth of information. It's a treasure store of information in the Old Testament that can just really expand our understanding of who God is and what it means to be one of His people, And so that's another thing we're trying to learn through this is, you know, just to draw ourselves closer to God and to make ourselves more like Him, and to help you know, let the Scriptures and the Holy Spirit through the Scriptures mold us into the form of God and into the likeness of His Son. And finally, just to get a better understanding of how we got here tonight on the orange carpet, you know, we're here for a reason. We're not just some random social club that just happened to evolve over time and turn into this big organization that people just like to come and hang out and spend some time together and do some good works with. That's not what the church is all about. The church is a family. We are the family of God. God is our Father. We're His children. And so, you know, these are family get-togethers is what they are. And one day we're all going to go home, and we're all going to be at home. And that's a day we all need to be looking forward to. I really appreciated Mike's lesson this past Sunday of how we can know. We can know. And we don't need to deny that. Okay, of all people on this earth, we are the ones that truly have hope. And we can look forward to that day of being with our Father, of going home. And we can all understand and come to grips with the fact that, hey, we're just travelers here. We're visitors. You know, we've seen that song, you know, I'm just traveling through. And so one day we're headed home. This is a journey that we're all on, and we're all headed home. We need to look forward to getting home. You know, I know me, even anytime I go on business travel, it's fun. You know, it's enjoyable. I enjoy going to new places, places I've never seen before, seeing things I've never seen before. You know, I really enjoyed the first time I ever went out to California and saw the Pacific for the first time. You know, I was in my 30s, and I was like, wow, there it is, you know. Pacific Ocean. It looks just like the Atlantic, but hey, it's the Pacific, you know. It's a neat experience. But there just comes a point where I say, okay, I've seen enough. I'm ready to go home. I'm ready to go be back in my own home, my own bed, back with my family. And folks, that's the way we ought to look towards heaven. We can look at that with confidence and with assuredness and just a longing to, okay, I'm ready to go home. Because that's exactly the way it is for us. All right, so some of the main concepts. We've talked about, you know, seeing the Bible as one novel. The real division, you know, we've divided this book up into two major divisions, the Old Testament and New Testament, the difference being there, the division being there between Malachi and Matthew. But I've challenged us all to look at it as the real division taking place at Genesis 3 and verse 6. Because it's there where we see sin enter the earth. Prior to that, sin was unheard of. And all the things that you and I face in this world today, all the struggles, the strife, the conflicts, all the discord, all that stuff did not exist in the world of Genesis 1 and 2. And we talked about a good bit about that many weeks ago, maybe months. And, you know, we really looked at that and talked about that, the difference. And we discussed how the Garden of Eden was truly heaven on earth. It was a very physical form of heaven. Everything was perfect. God had this wonderful relationship with man. There was nothing separating them. The earth itself was precisely how God wanted it to be. And Genesis 3:6 comes along. Sin enters the earth, and all of that is just utterly wiped out and destroyed. And God then implements His plan and starts making His movement to the cross. And so we've kind of broken this up into sections just to help it a little bit more manageable for us. And we finished up over the past several weeks, slavery in and judgment on Egypt. And then over here in the past two Wednesdays, we were in the two-month journey of Sinai. Now, in the past couple of Wednesdays, we've been in this 1 year at Sinai, which is covered in Exodus 19 through Numbers 10. And that's where we still are tonight. So last week we... hey, Brian, I think we got last week's up, man. Let's see. Yeah, this was last week's, buddy. Sorry, guys. Okay. Sorry about that. Okay. Are we going? All right. Can you click me a few more times, Brian? I don't think this thing's on. Yeah. Them computers, you know how they can be. Yeah, that's it.
It's not
27. No, it's 28. Okay. Let's see if this clicker works. Man, I have seemed to have lost. Brian, you may have to click it through for me tonight, man. I don't know what's going on. Okay. If I give you the ding, Brian, can you just hit the space bar? Ding. All right. Anyhow, moving on. All right, so back it up some, Brian. Let's go back to the recap. Keep on going. All right, go forward one. There we go. Okay, so last week we talked about, we're now at Sinai, okay? Everybody's arrived at Mount Sinai, and we see that God has descended upon the Mount Sinai in the form of smoke, thunder, flashes of lightning, and the sound of a loud trumpet. And it talks about how the people were afraid. And indeed, this is a terrifying scene. I know I would certainly be scared out of my wits seeing such a thing. And so the people are terrified. And so God lays down some ground rules, look, here, some things are going to go on. The only one allowed up on the mountain at this time is Moses. Anybody else, just stay away. Animals, off. Anybody comes up, they will surely die. And so they set up boundaries around the mountain there to prevent anybody or any animals from, carelessly straying into the area. And we also discussed the Ten Commandments, and we looked at that in good detail, and we talked about how we're not bound to the Ten Commandments anymore today as a law. And we talked about, though, how the Ten Commandments still are very much applicable to us. About the only one that really doesn't just fully apply to us today is the whole Sabbath thing, keep the Sabbath. But all the rest are still very much parts of our lives. Honor your father and mother, don't be committing adultery, don't be murdering, don't be lying, no idols. These are all things that we very much are very important aspects and parts of our Christian walk. But we also talked about how Jesus validated that. Said, look, these things are good. But the problem is, they had become checkboxes for people. Okay? They kind of turned into a checkbox system where people could check, I'm good, let's go. Jesus said, no, that's not good enough. He said, because see, the thing is, you think just because I checked the box, I'm good. But Jesus says, but you're lacking so much. Yeah, that's great that you've never murdered anybody, but you hate your brother. Yeah, it's great that you've never cheated on your wife, but lust is tearing you apart from the inside out. And so Jesus really took this to a whole nother level, and the people were just floored by the things that he was saying. And they were shocked and said, well, my stars, boy, this is just, wow. But see, Jesus brought it all back to the heart. And we talked about how law tends to take the heart out of the matter, because law kind of turns things into a series of check boxes by which we can judge ourselves and others by, and hey, we can judge ourselves as righteous or not righteous, and things tend to evolve into a mode of self-righteousness. And that's certainly what took place there with the time of the Pharisees. They were very self-righteous people who had judged themselves as holy and better than everybody else, and they were all happy to point out the flaws of everyone else around them. You see Jesus arguing with them about this all the time. And so we talked a good bit about that and how Jesus, really brought it down to the heart of the matter. He said, look, this is not a bunch of check boxes to be checked. This is supposed to change your heart and change who you are. And that's certainly, the lesson for us that we need to take away from that. Brian? All right, so we're now in Exodus, moving on from there. In Exodus chapter 21 through chapter 23, after the Ten Commandments have been given, we see that Moses received further commands and instructions from the Lord regarding a lot of different things. It was more than just the Ten Commandments. So slavery was discussed, personal injuries against one another, both intentional and accidental. That was covered, and you know how those situations are to be handled. Property rights were discussed. Sundry laws on and just dealing on the, just the day-to-day personal matters, you know, disputes and resolving disputes. Sabbath, work, and the Sabbath year. You might remember, you know, the Sabbath year, that seventh year when, you know, you were to work your land for 6 years, grow your crops, all this, and in the seventh year, you weren't to do anything with the land. And so that was that Sabbath year, and so all that is discussed in these chapters. Some national feasts were put into place. Brian? All right, and so then after all this is done, so God goes, you know, uses these three chapters, as it were, we have recorded of all these extra commands and laws that God had put into place to help govern the nation of Israel and to govern the lives of the people of Israel. And so we get then to the end of chapter 23, and verses 20 through 22, and the next slide is going to contain some more. So can I get a couple of readers, please?
Behold, I am going to send an angel before you to guard you along the way and bring you into the place which I have prepared. Be on your guard before him and obey his voice. Do not be rebellious toward him, for he will not pardon your transgression, since my name is in him. If you truly obey his voice and do all that I say, then I will be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversaries.
All right, Brian. All right, so this, you know, there's some really cool things that God is saying here, you know, and so let's look at some of these things. I am going to send an angel before you to guard you along the way. Would this give you comfort? You know, it would me. You know, if I had God say, look, I've got an angel, and he's gonna go ahead of your path, you know, and he's gonna just handle all this stuff for you. Okay, you know, boy, that'd give me a lot of courage. When we see angels at work in the scriptures, man, those are some tough dudes. You know, you see one angel just wiping out hundreds of thousands of people. It's just absurd the power that a single angel can have. And so if God were to come down and say, hey, Kirk, you know, I've got this angel. You're about to go through this conflict here, or I've got this big task ahead of you, but I've got this angel, and he's going to go ahead of you and just resolve it for you. You just got to go and, you know, do your thing. Okay. You know, that would give me a lot of confidence, I would think. And so, you know, it's really cool that God is saying this to them and giving them this insight here. I love that passage. I believe that somebody's going to have to help me out. It was either Elijah or Elisha 1, where, you know, he had someone with him, and I wish I would have thought about this and gone and read it. But, you know, he had someone with him, and this guy was really scared about the enemy they were facing. I'm sorry?
The Valley of the Dry Bones.
And, you know, he asked him to... You know, this guy was really scared, and it was either Elijah or Elisha 1 said, hey, God, Elisha, okay. God, you know, he asked God to open up this guy's eyes, and this guy opened his eyes, and all around was just myriads of angels, you know, and it was like, wow, okay. Well, that's a confidence builder there. Also here at the end, you know, God says, if you truly obey his voice and do all that I say, then I will be an enemy to your enemies and an adversary to your adversary. That sounds good, doesn't it? Yeah. Would you want God to be an enemy to your enemies? I would. You know, major confidence builder here, Brian. All right. Exodus chapter 23 through 24. Can I get another reader, please? Here again, we see, you know, God talking about, here's what I want you to do, and I will completely destroy them. You know, we obviously see that, you know, God is expecting that the people are going to have to do something, okay? They're going to have to take some kind of action. This isn't going to be a matter where they just can sit back in their lawn chairs and watch God do his thing. You know, something is required. And we saw in the previous verse that God said, look, be careful to do everything he says. Obey what I'm telling you to do. And so there is some action that is required. But the simple fact of the matter is, it's God who's going to be doing the heavy lifting, all right? There's action required of God's people, but God's going to be with them. And God says, I'm sending my angel ahead of you, and I'm just going to do the job for you. I just need you to go up there and do your thing, whatever that thing might be. And I will completely destroy them. Wow, what strength and confidence you think you could be able to gather from this, Brian? All right, Exodus 23, 25 through 28. But you shall serve the Lord your God, and he will bless your bread and your water. I will remove sickness from your midst. There shall be no one miscarrying or barren in your land. I will fulfill the number of your days. I will send my terror ahead of you and throw into confusion all the people among whom you come. And I will make all your enemies turn their backs to you. I will send hornets ahead of you so that they will drive out the Hivites, the Canaanites, and the Hittites before you, Brian. And so again there we see, you know, really powerful language. I will bless your bread and water. You know, that's God saying, look, I'm going to sustain you with the things of life, the things that you need. I will remove sickness from your midst, no one miscarrying or barren in your land. Wow. That's a big deal. Really big deal. I will fulfill the number of your days. You know, that's talking about lifespan there. You know, in other words, nobody's going to be dying early. You know, before their time, as it were. You know, everybody's going to live full lives. I will make your enemies turn their backs to you. I will send hornets ahead of you. Man, how awesome is it that we serve a God who just runs shop on everything on the earth? And it's so powerful enough that he can send swarms of hornets to drive away our enemies. And this is strong language. And it should really give comfort to those who are God's people. It should give comfort to us to see the strength that God has, the power and the might that God has to resolve the problems of our lives. He's extremely powerful and just, there's just no words to describe. He's unbelievably powerful and in full and total control of everything. So what kind of comfort should that give to us? You know, all this stuff is fully applicable to us as well. I know this is all written to the people of Israel at this time, but this is the very same God who has not changed. Brian? Exodus 23, 29 through 32, I will not drive them out before you in a single year, that the land may not become desolate and the beasts of the field become too numerous for you. I will drive them out before you little by little until you become fruitful and take possession of the land. I will fix your boundary from the Red Sea to the Sea of the Philistines and from the wilderness to the river Euphrates. For I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hand and you will drive them out before you. You shall make no covenant with them or with their gods. They shall not live in your land because they will make you sin against me. For if you serve their gods, it will surely be a snare to you. Right? And so there again, we see more very strong language, you know. And, you know, God's saying he's going to roll this thing out slowly. And we in the business world kind of see that happening, Chuck. You know, I'm sure you guys don't develop something and just wham, lay the whole full thing out there, do you? You know, I'm in the software industry. That's just not the way we do things. You know, it's not uncommon for us to release things in slow increments, and after a period of years, the full deal comes out. You know, and so that's a very common thing, and we see God doing the same thing here. You know, and what brilliance. You know, it makes total sense. If God just drives out people from a whole massive countryside, what could happen to the land? You know, the earth starts reclaiming things, doesn't it? You know, we see these ghost towns and stuff. Well, the earth will eventually reclaim stuff if it's just left to be. And so God says, look, I'm going to slow roll this thing. So by the time you guys are full on and in full possession, it'll all still be intact. It will not have been taken over by the earth and by all the animals and everything else, and y'all can just kind of move right in, you know. And so, really powerful language here. Notice too, I will fix your boundary. You know, that's God saying, I'm going to set this. It's going to be yours. You're really not going to have to fight for any of it. I'm going to be the one that sets it, and I'm going to make it happen for you. I will deliver the inhabitants of the land into your hands. So again, very powerful language that God is using to give his people comfort. And all he asks of them is that, look, just let me be your God. At the crux of the matter, at the bottom line, that's all he's wanting, is their commitment, their faith in him, and their worship. And, you know, there again, he says, look, don't be going and making covenants with them or with their gods. As you move into this thing and I'm slowly moving them out, don't you start intermingling with them, because this is what's going to happen. Don't do that. All right, Brian. All right, Exodus 24, 3 through 5. Would somebody like to read?
Then Moses came and recounted to the people all the words of the Lord and all the ordinances. And all the people answered with one voice and said, all the words which the Lord has spoken, we will do. Moses wrote down all the words of the Lord. Then he
Brian? All right, then Exodus 24, 6 through 8. Moses took half of the blood and put it in... can you back up one more, Brian? Thank you. Moses took half the blood and put it in basins, and on the other half of the blood he sprinkled on the altar. Then he took the book of the covenant. Okay, this is all the things that God has told him so far that he has written down. He took this book of the covenant and read it in the hearing of the people. And they said, all that the Lord has spoken, we will do, and we will be obedient. So Moses took the blood and sprinkled it on the people and said, behold, the blood of the covenant which the Lord has made with you in accordance with all these words. And so here we see that, you know, God has given him the people these laws. Moses has written them down in a book, and he's reading them publicly, and the people says, we're going to do it. You know, they're all together in on this and all of one accord. And we will do all that the Lord has spoken and will be obedient. Brian? All right, now here at the end of Exodus 24, we see Moses, Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, and 70 elders of Israel sharing a meal with some form of God literally standing in their presence. It's a really interesting scene. It says that the Lord was there. It talks about the Lord standing on this pedestal that looked like clear sapphire. It's a really strange scene, but we see this meal being shared amongst them all, and again, God literally being there in their presence, again, confirming this covenant that's being made between God and the people of Israel. God's giving them his laws, and is saying, look, if you will just follow me and do these things, I'm going to do this for you. I'm going to give you the land. I'm going to wipe them out and send my angel ahead. You know, God has said, this is what I'm going to do. And the people are then saying, okay, well, we're going to uphold our end. And so we see this agreement coming together. And now we see this meal taking place there in the presence of the Lord, where it's all very neatly and in a fellowship manner of God with his people coming together to confirm this covenant with one another. God then summons Moses up to the mountain to get the law written on tablets of stone. And he says, come up to me on the mountain and remain there, and I will give you the stone tablets with the law and the commandment which I have written for their instruction. And so Moses goes up on the mountain, and he's up there for 40 days and 40 nights. Wow. It's a long time to be up on the mountain with this stuff, huh? Do you have any thoughts or comments so far? I know I'm just kind of blowing through this thing and lecturing tonight, but... feel free to stop me if something jumps out at you. Huh? All right, Brian? All right, in Exodus chapters 25 through 31, God spends all of this this time here informing Moses how the tabernacle is to be built. Brian? What was the purpose of the tabernacle?
Place of
That's right. Yeah, so God had, could dwell amongst his people there. What else did I hear?
I said a place of worship.
Okay, a place of worship. Yeah. It's the place where God was among his people, wasn't it?
Yep.
Brian? Mike? Yes, yes, and I love that passage in Hebrews that talks about that. To me, it's a very powerful scene, right? You know, so we see the tabernacle here, and you and I know, you know, after everything that we've, you know, having been where we are now, we know, you know, we fully understand about the tabernacle and everything that went on in the tabernacle and the temple. You know, all the temple worship, the sacrifice after sacrifice after sacrifice after sacrifice that went on for a long time. You remember, you know, we know about the holy place and the holy of holies and that veil, you know, that separated God from mankind, and only the high priest could go in there and had to do certain stuff, and, you know, it's all this stuff. But then Hebrews talks about, like Mike is speaking of there, Hebrews talks about how all that was just a shadow. It was a copy of what's really there in heaven, the real temple, where God truly is. And then it goes on to talk about how Jesus is now that high priest who's there daily in the real place, not some man doing things in a copy of the temple, but Jesus himself, the very Son of God, in the real temple there in heaven, working for us. Powerful. Powerful scene, and I love that comparison there that the Hebrew writer speaks of. Yes, sir. Right. Yes. Yes.
Among the sinful people, that separation.
That's right. Yeah, we saw a very interesting conversation between God and Moses on that, didn't we?
Right.
I was just reading that today, and it's a very, very moving conversation that takes place between God and Moses there. We see, you know, Moses and Abraham had a relationship with God like just no other really seemed to have. Just the way you see them speak with God, and the way you see God reply to them is just very different than you see with others. And so I do. That was a wonderful conversation. Now, I was reading that today where Moses was like, look, hey, if you're going to send these people down here and you're going to say, you know, that you have faith in me and I'm the one that's going to be doing this, I'm not going unless you go. You got to have to go with me. And that's when we see that whole scene where God allows Moses to see his back and all this. You know, to me, it's a very confusing passage, but, you know, he hides Moses in the cleft of this rock and God passes by and Moses is able to see him in some form or fashion. And that was God's confirmation that I'm with you and I'm going to go with you. I'm going to be with you. It's all good. So, yeah, it's very, thank you. Very, very excellent passage. But yeah, you know, Exodus 29, 45 through 46, they're talking about the tabernacle. God says, I will dwell among the sons of Israel and will be their God. They shall know that I am the Lord their God who brought them out of the land of Egypt that I might dwell among them. I am the Lord their God. So yes, this was the dwelling place of God amongst his people at this time. Any other comments or thoughts? Input? Ann? Take your pick. I don't know. And there's a lot of debate and a lot of discussion about, you know, these passages that talk about where they saw God. There's some passage that says that no one has ever seen God, but then there's others that says that they have seen God. And so, you know, there's a big debate. There's a lot of discussion. There's a lot of ideas and theories out there of what, you know, who people really saw. You know, Abraham at the Oaks of Mamre there, you know, the Lord was there talking to him, walked with him. They were walking and talking about, you know, Sodom and Gomorrah, and the Lord's sitting here saying, hey, am I really going to hide this from Moses? From Abraham, and they're sitting here walking along together and having a conversation face to face. And so, you know, there's a lot of ideas that, you know, Was it some angel? Like the angel of Jehovah, the angel of the Lord? Was it a form of Jesus prior to the cross, you know, that he came down? A lot of different ideas and theories, but I don't know. Paul?
John 1:18 is talking in terms of comprehension, okay?
Okay.
Because he clearly says before that, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness didn't get it, didn't comprehend it. So when he says, no man has seen God at any time, and you put that together with 1 John, where he said, we saw him, we touched him, he was God. What he was saying in John 1:18 was, nobody was comprehending God.
Okay. Okay.
Does that help?
Sure. So it's not that anybody has never actually seen God, but they did not, they weren't, it was not an understanding. Okay. I can go with that. Any other thoughts?
No one has seen God, but God is spirit.
Okay.
God has revealed God to mankind.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Jesus in the Old Testament.
Yes.
Not the New Testament.
Yes. Yeah, it's my personal belief that a lot of these instantiations of God in the Old Testament and the Lord were actually forms of Jesus. That's my personal stance on the matter, but I don't argue with anybody. Yes, that's right. So that's my stance on the matter, but you'll hear plenty of others as well. So. All right, Brian. All right, so plans and design. So you know, in these chapters here, God spends a good bit of time going into great detail of exactly how this thing is to be built, how it's to be made. Goes over a lot of the details with Moses, and so he talks. First, he designs the Ark of the Covenant, and so the Ark of the Covenant was basically like a throne seat, is how I've always pictured it and imagined it of God. And it would be the place where God sat, where God was, his literal presence there. And so God says, there I will meet with you, and from above the mercy seat, from between the two cherubim, which are upon the ark of the testimony, I will speak to you about all that I will give you in commandment for the sons of Israel. Brian? Also, we see designs of the items of the tabernacle. You know, there's the table of the showbread, the lampstand, and all these other things that were to be situated within the tabernacle. There's the design and layout of the tabernacle itself is given. The priestly garments that the priests are to wear, consecration of the priests, and the sacrifices for the consecration. You know, there was a certain method that God said, all right, if these people are Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, and whoever else after them are going to be priests, they have to be confirmed in some way or another. And so they have these sacrificial, this service, as it were, to consecrate the priest to God as a priest in his tabernacle. And then there was also a discussion of the food of the priest. Yeah, I thought I saw a hand. Did I see a hand, Margaret? Did you see? No? Okay. Brian? Exodus 32, verses 1 through 2. We see disaster strike. And so all of this time, you know, we've seen Israel kind of waffle back and forth. One minute they're doing what God says, the next minute they're challenging. And they keep going back and forth, so that there at Sinai, they see this big scene up on the mountain. And God sends out all the, you know, these new rules and these new laws and says, look, all I want you to do is follow me. Dedicate yourselves to me, be obedient to me, have no other gods before me. And the people says, we're going to do it. Let's do it. We're all together in this. Let's do it. And then we see this, Exodus 32, 1 through 2. Now the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, and people assembled about Aaron and said to him, come, make us a God who will go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up from the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. So Aaron says to them, tear off the gold rings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me. Brian? Then all the people tore off the gold rings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. He took this from their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool and made it into a molten calf. And they said to him, this is your God, O Israel, who brought you up from the land of Egypt. Now when Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, tomorrow shall be a feast to the Lord. So the next day they rose early and offered burnt offerings. and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and to drink and rose up to play. Wow. You know, how do you do that? How do you see all the things that you have seen? How do you see the deliverance of God in Egypt? How do you live through that, be a part of that, witness that, see all the things that God accomplished in the journey from Egypt to Sinai, see this mighty scene up on this mountain, and do this? I don't understand that. But maybe we're not too far off, Brian. You know, what was the reason that the people did this? What did they say? Who was missing? Moses, yeah. Moses had been up on the mountain for over a month now. And so people were kind of like, well, I wonder if he's all right. Why don't you go up there and check? I ain't going up there. You'll get killed. Nobody can even go up on the mountain to see, because they'll be killed. They'll be struck dead. And so, yeah, Moses had been gone for 40 days, and I guess we got to take matters into our own hands, Brian. Can we sometimes be guilty of such things? I can be. You know, sometimes when I see something it's just not going right, it's just not going my way, and things are just falling apart, and I don't feel that God is doing something about it, well, I guess I just got to go make it happen myself. I'm guilty of that. And I'm sorry, you know, again, I try not to be one that gets too hard on the Israelites here. I read this, and I say, what is wrong with these guys? Sakes alive. But then I look at my own life, and I say, I guess I'm just like them. We saw that at the Red Sea. You know, they saw all those mighty things God did in those plagues. And then they get to the Red Sea, and we should have just stayed. Come on, guys, are you serious? But I'm the same way. Time after time after time after time, God pulls through for me in mighty ways, drops things right in my lap and says, there you go, Kirk, you needed it, there it is. And the very next time disaster comes around, my knees start knocking again. I'm no different. And so we can understand where these guys were coming from. Messed up as it was, we can understand where they're coming from. And it's these stories that I want us to take. You know, one of the goals I said I had earlier was for us to look at these stories and try to draw out of them ways to mold ourselves and work ourselves to become more like God, to become more like Christ. This is one of them. Because, folks, I see myself in these Israelites in so many ways. And when I see those things, that's where I know I got work to do. That's where I know I got to work with God to try to get this stuff straightened out. And so we need to keep these thoughts in our minds as things come our way. It's not the time for our knees to start knocking. It's not the time for us to start getting weak in the knees and thinking, oh, I was just better off back there. No, we weren't. God has got this. God's got it. And we can have full faith in Him. All we have to do is put our trust in Him, our faith in Him, obey Him, follow Him, and everything's going to be fine. That's where faith comes in. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I do think we get some time to God test us in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And we forget that it wasn't just Moses that was missing before the exodus. All the elders.
Yeah.
Joshua was also there.
Okay.
So God's testing the people.
Yes. Yeah, and Moses even told them that. If you remember, there was that scene where, you know, the people saw all this stuff. They saw the thunder and the lightning and the loud trumpet sounds and all this stuff coming off the mountain and God speaking. And they told Moses, hey, this is too much for us. Just let him speak to you. We don't want to hear this because if he speaks to us, we'll die. That was their words to Moses. And Moses says, look, don't be afraid. God is testing you. Okay? And so we can have faith in God. We can trust God, guys. But what it takes is our obedience and our faith and our following Him and not putting anything else in the place of Him. And He'll handle it. He will. We can trust that. We can have faith in that. Any other comments or thoughts? Yes. Patience is hard, is it not? Yeah. 40 days is a long time to be waiting. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Any other thoughts or comments? All right, guys. Well, thank you so much for your time tonight, and I hope y'all have a good rest of the week.